You're listening to the Food and Farming Podcast from AHDB. Practical know-how to help your farm business.
Welcome to the AHDB Food and Farming Podcast. I'm Phil Maiden and thanks for joining me. This week, we're very lucky to have with us a special guest from across the Atlantic who's sharing her knowledge of handling livestock. Dr. Temple Grandin is a world-renowned expert whose research in the US has led to reducing stress and injuries in cattle. As a professor of animal science at Colorado State University, Temple is an expert designer of livestock handling facilities used across North and Central America, Europe, Australia, and New Zealand. Temple, thank you very much for joining us this evening. We're actually here in the office at Worcester Market because you're preparing at the moment, of course, for your webinar. Firstly, I just wanted to ask you about how you got into the industry and what was it that drew you to working with livestock in the first place?
Well, I did not come from a livestock background. I first got introduced to livestock. I was at a boarding school and we had a 12-cow dairy. I learned to milk cows there. And then when I was 16, I went out to my aunt's ranch out in the western U.S. in Arizona, got introduced to the beef industry. So this brings up the really important thing of students get interested in things they get exposed to. And I was not exposed to the livestock industry until I was in my mid-teens.
And so you're here in the UK now and you're talking about your life's work. Just give us a bit of an understanding of what it is that you've achieved in your life.
Well, I've done a lot of work on improving the design of handling facilities. And some of the projects that I designed are shown in the HBO movie Temple Grandin, things I did in my 20s. I was very motivated to do those projects because I was a severely autistic child and people thought I was stupid, and I wanted to prove I wasn't stupid. Now, I've kind of changed my philosophy on things. When I first started in my 20s, I thought you could build a self-managing cattle handling facility. There's no such thing as that. Good equipment makes good handling better, but it doesn't replace management. And I find we still have to keep reminding people not to yell at cattle, not to jam too many cattle into the pen that leads up to the single-file race, just basic things to work the point of balance correctly. And one common mistake I see people making all the time in a single file race is to stand at the head of the animal and poke the butt. And then you're telling it to go forward and backward at the same time. That is not going to work very well. But one of the things I did later on in my career that I think had some of the biggest effect on animal welfare at the slaughterhouses was implementing the McDonald's audits. And I developed a very simple scoring system for evaluating the slaughterhouses. Everything had to be dead when you hung it on the rail. Really high percentage, 95% more of the cattle shot dead on the first shot with the captive bolt. Falling down anywhere in the facility, 1% or less. Electric goad use, you had to get more than 75% through with no electric goads. And then another measurement that really worked was vocalization. You've got cattle bellowing up in the stun box. You've got something bad going on. And you should only have no more than 3 out of 100 bellerin in the stun box. And then Wendy's also did the same thing, and so did Burger King. And having these three big companies all enforce a simple scoring system resulted in more change in the year of 1999 than I'd seen in my whole entire career, because they were now forced to manage equipment. And the good news is, out of 75 big U.S. plants that were on the McDonald's approved supplier list, only three had to buy expensive new stuff. It was amazing what some non-slip flooring did, training of people, changing lighting. Cattle do not like to go into the dark. Just simple changes. Stunner maintenance was major. The major cause of poor captive bull stunning was lack of maintenance. And that brought about a lot of changes in animal welfare. So you need to have both the equipment and the management.
You've made some dramatic changes in the way that livestock is handled in your career. Why do you think you've had the impact that others hadn't?
Well, one of the things I did is I did a lot of writing. And in the HBO movie Temple Grandin, there's a scene where I go up to the editor of the Arizona Farm Ranchman magazine, our state farm magazine, got his card, because I knew if I wrote for that magazine, that would help my career. That scene is true, and it's really, really important. I saw doors to opportunity. This is something a lot of people don't see. And so I wrote in the trade magazines. And then that got me a press pass, which got me into big, expensive meetings with gigantic registration fees. And I go up to the editor of the national trade magazines. So writing, first of all, starting in the cattle trade magazines, and then later on the academic press. And there was a very nice professor named Jack Albright at Purdue University who invited me to do my first academic article. So I was writing both in the cattle trade press, but also in the academic journals, a lot of articles on just how to do things. Writing is really important. And I'm finding, after all these years, I still sometimes have to write about the same things. Don't yell at cattle. Don't stand in front of cattle and try to make them go forward. A non-slip flooring. Unfortunately, just in the last year at home, some brand new facilities got built with glass smooth floors. That's not going to work. You know, we still have to just remind people about basics.
Moving on from that, what is it that you think means that you've been able to see things others haven't observed? Because this is one thing I picked up in the film, was it appeared that you were spotting things that others just were blind to.
Well, I'm a total visual thinker. In fact, I have a new book out now called Visual Thinking, The Hidden Gifts of People Who Think in Pictures, Patterns, and Abstractions. And there's different ways that people think. And I'm an extreme visual thinker. Like today, we were out at a farm, really nice new cattle handling facility, and the sun came out and the fence made big shadows, the bars of the fence. Then the sun went behind a cloud and the shadow went away, and we managed to get some pictures of that, because that's something you can just change that can all of a sudden make the animals refuse to go. Another thing that's bad in a lot of facilities is right at the entrance of the single file race, there's a bar across on the floor, and that's a balk point. And you can also find distractions in facilities if you just watch your animals. What are they looking at? There might be a little red string or something moving on the side of the facility, and that's going to make your cattle stop, to get distractions out of facilities. And then non-slip flooring is just so important. And the problem you've got with flooring is that it slowly wears out and you don't realize it. This is why it's important to measure handling. So if you measure slips and falls, then you can see, are you getting better or are they getting worse?
And of course, we're talking here about how to make sure livestock are calm when they're either going to an abattoir or being handled on farm. What's the real importance of this? What's your message to any farmers or anyone handling cattle? Why should this be of paramount importance?
Well, it's good for animal welfare, but also cattle that get all agitated and fearful when you handle them have lower weight gain. People are more likely to get hurt. You know, it's important to have good cattle handling facilities. Now, over the years, the temperament of cattle has gotten calmer. My student, Bridget Voisinet, back in the mid-90s, did the very first experiment to show that animals that become really agitated when you're restraining them had lower weight gains. And so now, at least in the U.S., we've done 25 years of temperament selection, and the cattle, Angus cattle, for example, we have now, are much calmer than Angus cattle we had 25 years ago, for example.
And so we're here at Worcester Market this evening because you're going to be speaking to a lot of our levy payers, in fact. What is it that you're hoping you'll get across to them? Are you talking about your career, or are you going to be talking more about things they can learn on farm?
I'm getting concerned about it. I've been in the cattle industry for 50 years, and you're getting more and more people think cattle are just environment wreckers. And I'm really pleased about the regenerative grazing that I've seen here. Because when you use the cattle right or the sheep right, they improve the land, they improve the soil health, they improve the biodiversity. And I wrote a paper last year reviewing literature on cover crop grazing and on regenerative agriculture. A lot of different studies showing how you improve land with it. It's called Grazing Cattle, Sheep and Goats is an Important Part of a Sustainable Agricultural Future. The use of grazing animals might solve some of the problems. What people forget is that some of the best grazing land that we have in the U.S., like in Iowa, Illinois, was created by herds of grazing bison, coming in a tight herd, grazing a patch, and then moving on. And by using the polywire electric fence that you just put up with the reels, like a piece of string, you can easily move the cattle around on the pasture. There's also getting to be a lot more interest in virtual fencing, where the cow has a collar and it works off the GPS. But we need to be managing grazing so much better. And when we do grazing right, it's just amazing. Like the first farm I visited, they had to totally change their mindset. You don't mow it and bale it. You leave it out there in the pasture. That's a huge mindset change. And it takes about 3 to 5 years to really start seeing the soil benefits. But we really need to be doing the regenerative grazing. We've got to show that the grazing animals, when used right, can improve the land. Now, you can wreck land. I saw some sheep grazing today where the pasture had been overgrazed. No, we got to use them right. And you've got to move them fairly tightly bunched to an area, let them take half the grass. And then you don't come back on that patch of grass until the roots have totally regenerated. The roots take longer to regenerate than the green part of the plant.
So can people watching the webinar tonight expect you to be talking a bit about grazing as well as talking about handling?
Yes, and I've gotten interested in the grazing because I've spent 50 years of my life working with cattle, and you've got people saying they're horrible environment wreckers, we ought to just get rid of them. So I really started looking into the research on the grazing, and you do it right, it can really do good things for the land. We also need to be doing cover crops, you know, along with the cash crops, but you got to use the right cover crops. It's very, very local. Something that works well in one place may not work well in another place.
Is this something that you're hoping you can influence environmental experts on?
Well, that's why I wrote an open access paper called Grazing Cattle, Sheep and Goats is an important part of a sustainable agricultural future. It reviews scientific papers on both cover crop grazing and pasture grazing. You have a lot of land here that you can't possibly crop. And the grazing animals, a lot of land evolved along with grazing animals, especially in the U.S., the herds of bison. And when it comes to the methane issue, the herds of bison that were in the U.S. before any Europeans came to North America were about 85% of the methane. Also, swamps put out way more methane.
And just looking at the fact you've been here in the UK for a few days now, what's your impressions been when you've been looking around on farm?
Well, I was extremely pleased what I saw on the rotational grazing. Really pleased. And then moving them about every 3 or 4 days, which makes that, you know, easy to do. And the cattle have gotten really gentle and they're really easy to move. These are kind of things that we need to be doing. But the producer admitted there's a big mindset change to say, instead of mowing it and baling it, to leave it out there in the field.
And also, I've got to ask you, because I did watch the film about your life. What did you make of someone making a film of your life?
Well, the producer of that film, Emily Gerson-Saints, is a mother of a severely autistic adult, nonverbal, and she wanted that film to be right. And one of the things I really liked in it is it showed my visual thinking absolutely accurately. And one another big thing I'm working on right now is what I call different kinds of minds. You've got your visual thinkers. They might be some of your best pasture people or people handling cattle. Your visual thinkers are also very good at anything mechanical. We have a huge shortage, both here and in the U.S., of people to fix mechanical things. There have been a lot of very questionable lifts lately that I know haven't been serviced. Now, the visual thinkers, very good with mechanical things, but really bad in abstract math. I know a guy that took one welding class in high school. He cannot do algebra. He's building beef plants all over the U.S., and I had people build equipment for me, like the center track restrainer system, and the person who built that would have been labeled autistic today. And he grew up working on cars and working on mechanical things. And we need these visual thinking minds. Then you have your mathematical minds, your pattern thinkers, that I'm going to get a degree in engineering, but it's much more in the mathematical. And then, of course, you have verbal thinkers. And we need all the different kinds of minds. But I'm very concerned that my kind of mind, since I can't do higher math, is going to get screened out. And we need these people. If you want the water systems to work and a whole bunch of other stuff to work, you need the visual thinkers that can just see how mechanical things work. And in my new book, Visual Thinking, Hidden Gifts of People Who Think in Pictures, Patterns, and Abstractions, I explain this. And I also talk about the skill loss. Now you get, right now in the U.S., we're importing poultry processing plant equipment and pork processing plant equipment from Holland. And one of the reasons for that is in ninth grade, the student can either go university or tech route. Well, there's a tendency sometimes to stick the nose up at the tech route. And I'm talking high-end skilled trades. I'm not talking about floor tiles or roofing. I'm talking about really high-end, where people are inventing equipment, patenting equipment. I call it the clever engineering department, where you just see how mechanical things work. And it's a different kind of skill. You know, some people say, well, the stupid kids take shop. Well, let me tell you, I worked with a lot of those individuals out, you know, building these big meatpacking plants, and they're not the stupid kids. It's a different kind of thinking. They're not good at higher abstract math, but you need the whole team. What I have found on something like a big meat plant, the visual thinkers, they do all the mechanical stuff. And then the degreed engineers work on boilers, refrigeration, make sure the roof isn't going to fall down, and the much more, you know, mathematical parts of the factory.
That's really fascinating to hear. And obviously, it's something that you have really helped the industry with by being a visual thinker. Thank you ever so much for talking to us. I'm looking at the time and thinking we've got to let you go and get ready for your webinar now. But Thank you so much. And is there any message you've got for our listeners that you would like to part with?
Cattle handling is something that's greatly improved. A lot of better facilities, And we always got to just keep cattle handling really good. But I also think we need to be showing people how we can use the grazing animal to improve land. And I'm also very concerned that a lot of the visual thinkers, who are very good at mechanical things, animals, art, and photography, are getting screened out with all the math requirements.
Well, thank you very much, Temple, and enjoy the webinar this evening. And for anyone who wants to watch the webinar again, you can go to the AHDB website, www.ahdb.org.uk. From all at the Food and Farming Podcast, thank you for listening to this episode.
If you have any comments about this podcast or have ideas for future episodes, please email foodandfarming@ahdb.org.uk.